This is your tech news briefing for Friday, July 17th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Research institutions around the world have been racing to develop treatments and vaccines for the coronavirus. But while they've been at it, they've been under cyber attack. We've been talking about this on the show. Now, officials from the US, the UK, and Canada say that Russia is behind some of the attacks. Our reporter Jenny Strasberg will explain what's going on after these headlines. We got another surprise ruling out of the European Union yesterday. The bloc's top court ruled that companies will have to face restrictions when storing EU citizens' data on American servers. The decision invalidates a widely used data transfer agreement between the US and the EU, and it's a victory for privacy advocates in the bloc. But our reporter Sam Schechner says it's not yet clear what this means for companies.
This is very much an on-paper kind of thing. Nobody's walking out with a big, pair of garden shears to snip all the fiber optic cables between the U.S. and the EU. But going forward, you know, companies are going to have to make hard choices about whether they want to risk running afoul of EU privacy regulators who are going to say, hey, you don't have the right to be sending this data, and we're going to issue you a massive fine. And some companies may choose to no longer do business in Europe. Others may choose to move some of their data centers to Europe to keep the data about European citizens and residents there.
Netflix is continuing to ride the benefits of shelter in place. The streaming giant said it added more than 10 million subscribers in the second quarter. But the party won't last forever. Netflix says it expects growth to slow down in the second half of 2020. The company also promoted its programming chief, Ted Sarandos, to co-CEO, and they gave him a spot on the board. The move sets Sarandos up to eventually succeed Reed Hastings as Netflix's chairman and CEO. And the FBI is now probing this week's Twitter hack. In case you somehow missed it, hackers broke into the Twitter accounts of a bunch of major businesses, public figures, and politicians on Wednesday. Security experts are calling it the worst hacking incident in Twitter's recent history, and it's not yet clear exactly how it was carried out. But our reporter Dustin Volt says the FBI's involvement is a sign that there could be broader implications for international security.
It's not unusual for the FBI to investigate a cyber crime case like this. In fact, it would actually be more unusual if they didn't investigate in some ways. But it does show that there's a lot of interest from the federal authorities on sort of understanding this, given how important Twitter is, not just as a social media site for people to share ideas and commentary, but to, you know, for government officials to communicate and for government agencies to share information about the pandemic or natural disasters. And so there's a lot of concern about this happening again and what it could mean if next time a head of state has their account hacked and someone says there's going to be a nuclear missile deployed in the next 5 minutes. You know, this is something that could really, really scare people. So everybody's sort of on the same page that they want to investigate this, understand how it happened, make sure it doesn't happen again, because Twitter is such an important communications tool in 2020.
It's a big day for hacking news. Up next, some research institutions have been the targets of a different cyber attack. And some Western allies are pointing a finger at Russia. Why that's a big deal? After the break. Earlier this year, we learned that hackers were targeting research institutions and hospitals around the world, the kinds of places that have been working on treatments and vaccines for the coronavirus. Now we have more information about who's behind it. Officials from the US, the UK, and Canada are pointing a finger at Russia, specifically one group that you might remember from its role in the 2016 election. Our reporter Jenny Strasberg has been looking into this, and she joins us now to explain. Jenny, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
It's been a while since we talked about these cyber attacks on the show. Can you just remind us, how long have they been going on? Who are they targeting? And what are these hackers looking for?
Sure. So these hacks have been going on for a very long time. Like, it's not just a pandemic thing. However, the stakes are high. They've never been higher. The race for a vaccine is an international, you know, arms race is kind of the analogy. The winners get economic stability. They get improved healthcare for their populace. It's a big deal, right? Not to mention the profit in it. So the vaccine and related entities concerned with developing vaccines and research and testing and production have become a very, very fertile ground for hackers.
Yeah, so now we have these officials from the US, the UK, and Canada saying that they can attribute at least some of these attacks to Russia. What entity exactly are they pointing the finger at, and how did they figure that out?
Sure. So it's interesting because this is an entity called APT29. You know, in the cyber community tends to give code names to these groups, and this one's best known as Cozy Bear. APT stands for Advanced Persistent Threat. This is a notorious, prolific, and sophisticated group believed linked to Russian intelligence. So there's been a trend over the past, call it half a dozen years, for like private hacking to kind of service governments. And APT is part of that. Intelligence and security folks have said over the past few years, in service of the Kremlin. And we've written a lot about that in the journal. So this group is certainly well known. They were previously associated with linked to attacks on the White House, the U.S. State Department, the Democratic National Committee, European governments. Like, they're not an unknown quantity. It's remarkable to have three allies all join together to say, we firmly believe this is APT-29, because they have to all kind of sign off on that, and they have to have a high level of confidence in that to do that. The Western allies are clearly and very strongly saying, we believe this is Russia, and this is a warning that they're not going to let up.
And how did they figure that out? Do we know?
So we don't know the details of that. I mean, there's a long history in the cyber world of looking for the hallmarks of attribution, whether the hours that the hackers appear to be working to, like, the scripts that they use, how sophisticated they appear to be. And there's a lot of industry jargon, but the APT term by definition applies to groups that are deemed to be not able to act in such a sophisticated way on their own. They've got like state support. They're very well funded. They're very sophisticated. They have state tools at their disposal, and they are probably part of the state tools.
Got it. So it's kind of like reverse engineering based on a bunch of different clues. Going back a little bit, you said it was really significant that these allies named Russia. Why? What does it really mean for them to be able to definitively say this was Russia?
The act of attributing the cause of a hack or a series of attacks or espionage, state-sponsored espionage, obviously has political connotations, has ramifications in the context of, you know, denials and repercussions, perhaps in retaliation. So it's not something that's usually done lightly. When Australia came out recently and basically described a bunch of attacks with all the hallmarks of Chinese hackers, you know, that was noted around the world. The U.S. has done the same with China and Iran related to COVID and vaccine production and actually like targeting the very heart of the pandemic response. So this is the latest. It's meaningful in the joint attribution and the fact that it's Russia and what we know this group has been capable of in the past.
You know, you mentioned this, but I want to touch on, why does everybody want this kind of information about the vaccine, about treatments for the virus? What does it mean to have that data first, that information first?
Sure. This is definitely an instance of, this isn't like hacking to stop the process of something, to like shut down a business. This is the kind of hacking, the way the officials described it, it's the kind of hacking that involves trying to exfiltrate information, like get the best intellectual property out of your adversary. If a country gets an edge on producing the vaccine, they get an edge in inoculating all of their people, an edge in the production to essentially reopen their economy, stabilize their country. This has been a tremendous threat to the whole world, and it's a global economic arms race.
Not to mention the bargaining power that you might have if you're a country that wants some negotiating power and a seat at the table, like, you know, these countries that may have been sidelined in global negotiations. You would think that these intelligence agencies in the US and the UK might want to keep what they know close to the vest. Why tell everybody? Why make it public?
It's always a conversation we know within the intelligence agencies of what to kind of hold tight and what to make public. And to me, this clearly is a sign that they want everybody to take this seriously. Like, from the smallest entities in the National Health Service to the future providers of vials for the vaccine and the agents to develop the vaccine, like, there is a benefit in public relations. You get a bunch of high profile stories saying a certain hostile nation is trying to hack the critical infrastructure of allied nations. And if you're the information security officer of a company or a hospital, it's a very jarring reminder that you better make sure your software is patched, your protocols are being followed, and you've closed your vulnerabilities to the internet. I mean, the UK National Cybersecurity Center is, I think, probably a bit more public with this stuff. And it's clear that they wanted to get the word out, quite simply.
So kind of a PSA.
It's a bit of a PSA, and it's also like reminding, hey, a lot of people are still working from home, and there's a lot of vulnerability that didn't exist before the pandemic that's heightened by all this, and the would-be stealers of information know that, and they're working overtime to get their hands on it.
Right. Perhaps a good reminder as we note all of the hacking that's been going on from this to Twitter and beyond. How has Russia responded to all of this? What have they said?
So the Kremlin told us that they refute the allegations. A spokesman for the president told the state news agency that they will not accept the allegations, and they also continue to refute allegations of interference with the election. They're not raising their hands to say we're trying to hack the vaccine. So,
which would be surprising if they were. Our reporter, Jenny Strasberg, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And that was your tech news briefing. We've got more tech stories on WSJ.com, so check us out there. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.